The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 487. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. My guest for this episode is a very busy man that has a lot on his plate, but he revels in that and is excited for the challenge of doing all of these projects that he has laid out in front of him. I'm talking about Mr. Stephen Christian. Now, he is the creator of Cootie Catchers, which is a comic book, but it's more than just a comic book. As you'll find out, it's kind of an immersive environment in which Cootie Catchers basically is a story about health and making health education fun. And so Stephen's going to talk about where he came up with the idea and how his own life mirrors his project, because he is a student working on his MD PhD in integrative neuroscience. That's way above me. When he defines it, I'm just sitting there smiling and shaking my head because I don't know what he's talking about. But we talk about that. We talk about the Kickstarter that's ongoing for Cootie Catchers. We also talk about his other projects, Island Fever. And of course, his studios, Iltopia Studios, where he does vlogs and he also does podcasts and whatnot. So Stephen's a very busy man between medical school and these projects. You definitely want to check out what he's got going on. And before we get to that conversation with Stephen, I want to thank once again the newest sponsor of the PVD Cast, Courtney 614 Online Sales. Times are tough. Some people don't have a lot of extra cash laying around. Well, that's where places like Courtney 614 Online Sales come into play. If you need fashion and you're a woman, if you need health and beauty, all right, even if you like some antiques, that's right, antiques are coming soon. You can find all those through Courtney 614 Online Sales. And Courtney's got everything set up through all those major retail and reselling outlets like Poshmark and whatnot, and eBay. So if you need something of health and beauty or women's fashions, there's no better place to turn than Courtney 614 Online Sales. And so there you go. Check them out. Pick something up for your girlfriend, your sister, your aunt, your grandma, whatever. And again, check out Courtney 614 Online Sales by looking for Courtney 614 or on some of those retailers. It's Courtney underscore 614, and Courtney is spelled C-O-R-T-N-E-Y. Again, check them out, and I appreciate their patronage. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Stephen Christian. Ladies and gentlemen, this afternoon, I am sitting down with Stephen Christian, the creator of Cootie Catchers, and a lot of other things, too. You got a full plate, if I may say so, sir.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I stay busy.
Well, currently, you are a MD, PhD student in integrative neuroscience out at the University of Reno.
Nevada, Reno. Yep.
Yes. Okay, for those folks that are like me, what is integrative neuroscience? Please let us know what that is. It sounds very, very complicated and confusing and way over my head.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of buzzwords, I would say. So the integrative neuroscience program is a interdisciplinary program. So it's sort of like the new kid on the block, and it's super integrated or nuanced within like the field of medicine. And so the way I like to describe it is like me as a somebody in the integrative neuroscience program, my interest and my exploration is looking at the integration of technology within the broader field of medicine. And so like, you know, like all the immersive stuff, AR, VR, AI, they're relatively new, but like medicine is a very slow moving thing, right? And so with it, they kind of just said, oh yeah, all that new tech stuff, it deals with like human sensory input and human perception, and that's all neuroscience, but there's all these applications within dermatology and all that. So they just said, we'll just put it in neuroscience. And so the integrative part is just like, how do you integrate neuroscience or these sort of components into like the health sciences or these sort of traditional things? And so okay. it's very interdisciplinary. But in a nutshell, the integrative neurosciences, it's sort of patient-centered or people-centered. And so like anything dealing with like eye input, like visual stimuli, auditory stimuli, tactile stimuli, like anything dealing with like neurons, broad picture neurons, you could sort of put within neuroscience.
How long have you been in that program, if I may ask?
I've been in it for 2 years, I think. So the way it works for MD PhD students is you spend your first 2 years trying to get through like all your classwork, all your stuff before you take your first board exam. And then after that, they kind of let you go free to like do your like PhD stuff. And so it's sort of like you do one, then you do the other, and then you finish up. So I'll finish up my PhD in like a year and a half, and then I'll go back into the hospital for the rest of my clinical training.
Okay. Well, let's talk about a project that is obviously it kind of has that technological aspect to it, which would fit right in with your integrative neuroscience program. But you are the creator of Cootie Catchers.
Yes.
So would you give the listeners a little summary as to what that project's all about?
Yeah. So Cootie Catchers is my first attempt at directly integrating my interest and my skill set in visual storytelling, so like comic books and animation, with like peer-reviewed empirical science to create an avenue for people to learn about, you know, in their conditions. And this point is just like learn about skincare through an immersive storytelling experience. And so it's not a game, it's a book, but it's a book that allows you to explore sort of like the human body in this quirky adventure. And so Cootie Catchers is right now it's a 60-page book, and it's taking pretty much all the things that we know to be true for like skin health, and specifically like what the causes of acne, and through the characters in the story, as they learn how to defeat the, you know, the cooties, you essentially can apply that to your life. And like what they did in the story, you can do a version of that for yourself so that you could address the cooties in your life. It's one of those things where like you get introduced to a concept and you'd be like, this can't be real, right? And so then you find out it is real, and then you're like, oh man, like if I don't do anything with this information, like I'm not only doing myself a disjustice, but I'm doing everybody else a disjustice as well. The fact that cooties are real things is mind blowing to me. Like cooties are a real thing, and they're the bacteria that causes acne. And so what does it look like for there to be a cootie outbreak on an island, a fictional island that's a proxy for the skin, and have the characters go around the island trying to find ways to defeat the cooties, and then, you know, at least be able to translate that to some sort of lessons that people could pull from to apply to their lives, whether they're kids or people that have had acne problems in the past, and you know, try to figure like how do you demystify health education in a way that's really fun and quirky.
You know what? That was what I was going to mention. Is this sounds like 10 times better than the health education I got in high school or junior high, because it was so boring, so drab. So here's some worksheets, here's a video. And it just didn't really, I think, register with a lot of people, including myself on some days. So tip of the hat for you trying to inject some fun, some storytelling, something that is as educational as it is informative.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like the way that I've sort of seen it is, you know, because of COVID and because of all these sort of these things that have happened in the world and in society, the things that like I grew up on, which was like, you know, Schoolhouse Rock, Magic School Bus. There was this series, this movie and this cartoon series called Osmosis Jones, you know, like mm-hmm. those things, like I grew up on that. And so like, it's crazy to see how like that stuff hasn't really been like that approach hasn't been continued over the decades, but there's still like an appetite for it. And there's an interest for it because we're a lot more health conscious now than we were before. And so for me, it's more of a like, how do you appeal to the culture just as much as you appeal to sort of like, you know, their interest in science? Most of the time, you know, people don't really care about the science unless they have like a real reason to, unless it resonates with them. And then they're all in, right? And the best way I describe it is like, you know, growing up on Star Wars, like we all know people that like live by like, you know, the Jedi Order, or like they live by like this sort of like code of conduct that like they've seen in movies, and they apply that to their lives so religiously that like you can't tell them that it's not real, right? And to me, it's like a lot of that is just storytelling. And within medicine, like everything is storytelling. Like unless you're in there looking at all the microscopic stuff or doing all the, you know, the preparations and stuff, everything is a story that you learn, and you either have to take a test for it, or you have to find a way to communicate that to a patient and stuff. So as a storyteller, you know, if you're just telling me that I need to make something look cool and appealing to people, and the story is already there, then like, oh man, that makes my job a lot easier, right? Like, it's so I've working on this project has really opened up my eyes to the possibilities of like what health education can look like. And what it can feel like and how it can resonate with people. Because regardless how complex the, you know, like the information is, if it resonates with people and you put a cute character in front of it, people will tell you all the stuff that they love about it. And I love that. It makes my job, you know, a lot easier to navigate that.
And this isn't just a comic book project, because you have a lot of immersive activities to go along with it. I mean, you have animations, you have interactive scenes. Did I read you're working on like a headset, a VR helmet type of thing as well?
Yeah. So I actually completed that first, and it became more of this thing of like, okay, I have this, it's essentially like a Google Cardboard style, like phone case for your phone that you could essentially put your phone on your face. I wanted to create a like a hands-free, like immersive experience that is like relatively affordable. And the hard part is when you have like a comic book that opens up and every page is augmented, it comes to life. The problem is like you have to hold the book with one hand and then you have to hold the phone with another hand. And in order to turn the page and everything, like it's just a problem, right? So the way around it is, if you could put the phone on your face and you're able to see through the, you know, through the camera view of your phone, then like you have your hands free and you could just enjoy the book and everything that you look at, it comes to life. And so I was able to create that, and I spent a couple of years prior to medical school sort of working on that. Once I did that, then I was like, okay, well now I need content to like give people so that they can make the most out of it. And so with it, it really allowed me to explore really like how I could take advantage of the technology to show animation in a novel context, right? And so like for me, I was an animator for like 10, 15 years prior to medical school. As a result of that, all I'm doing is just like putting animation inside books. And then that animation that's inside the books, it's obviously immersive, so you can move it around and you're pretty much the camera person, you know, but it's all in the context of a book, and it all works with any sort of smartphone. So you don't need like a $500 headset. You just need a phone and a phone case and then a book, and like you're good to go. Like I spent a lot of time just like making it as accessible as possible. You know, like in the tech space, people just, you know, it's always this next device, or it's always like there's all these limiting factors that get in the way of people just enjoying themselves with technology. If people learn stuff along the way or whatever, if they have a great experience, hopefully that allows people to create more experiences and stuff. But it's just something that I thought just needed to exist. And if I, you know, if I play a part in, you know, lowering that barrier of entry, then, you know, so be it.
And I think that one of the things that I researched about you is that, you know, you're very passionate about making sure, as you said, when you were explaining the VR helmet, so to speak, was that it's open to everybody, including those that are maybe underserved in the world. What is the game plan for making sure that those folks that need this type of education and entertainment get it?
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to figure out as of now. Obviously, I'm doing the Kickstarter, so the Kickstarter is one of those things that is one of those avenues for me to sort of launch everything and show what the possibilities are. And then prior to medical school, and especially during COVID, I did a lot of stuff because I used to live in Portland, so I did a lot of stuff with like the Multnomah County Library, Portland Public Schools, and a lot of different nonprofits. And really, it's you know, for all intents and purposes, it's a book and a box, right? And so, you know, it's a, you know, as long as it works, it's just really about like making it to where I can easily ship it out, or I can manufacture it easily and work with different school districts, work with different nonprofits, work with different health, you know, like dermatology offices and like clinics, working with library systems to just try to get it out as much, like as wide as possible. And so I've had a lot of great responses with the implementation of the AR and all of it, to the point where people actually see the vision and people see what is possible, which light years away from like when I started, when I used to have to like explain everything, but I have a lot of stuff to show now. And so then it's just a matter of just like, you know, kind of raising the money and getting enough sales and getting enough interest in it so that, you know, more people can get their hands on it. You know, the more people buy it, the more people invest in it, the more people, you know, share it and like, you know, sort of the subscriber customer base grows, the cheaper I'm able to produce it. And that's really the thing for me. It's and obviously like the more people I can hire to help me get it out too, because this has kind of just been this has very much been just like a side project to just offset the stress of medical school. and so I have a lot of stress to offset, right? And so with it, because people enjoy the plushies and they enjoy the style of the characters and the quirkiness of the storytelling and they enjoy the animation, it's for me to just kind of just be like, okay, this is what I have out. This is what I'm trying to do with it. This is my goal with it. You know, I want to have it in every library and every school in America, you know, and it's just a matter of like, how do I allow for people to do that and like make that happen with me, because I can't be everywhere at once. And so it's a dilemma for me, you know, but you know, I do the best I can.
You mentioned the Kickstarter. It is currently ongoing and it has quite a bit more time left on it. So what is the current status of the Kickstarter? What can people expect with it, et cetera, et cetera?
It's been a challenge for me because I'm the type of person that will take the concept and I'll try to create so many access points for it, whether it's plushies and, you know, puzzles and cubes and books and all that. And so this is, for me, at least with the Kickstarter, it's, you know, the base tier is you're just buying the book, and with the book, you get, you know, like a sticker pack and you get the, like the 60 page graphic novel. When you get the graphic novel, the first page allows you to like download an app for all the augmented experiences. And it's essentially every page comes to life very much like a TV show. So the way I describe it is like, you know, the book is a season of a show and each page is a new scene in the show. And every chapter is an episode. And so from cover to cover, you're looking at anywhere from like 60 minutes to like 90 minutes worth of like original animation inside a book, right? So like it's as immersive as you could possibly get at that point. And so like that's the first tier. The second tier is kind of like a back to school sort of like bundle. And so it comes with like an augmented reality enabled backpack. You get like a plushy keychain, and then you'll get the book as well. I think the second tier is like a collector's edition. So you'll get both of the like main characters as like stuffed animals. Obviously you'll get the book and the backpack. And then I think you'll get like a shirt or something, and like everything comes to life in their own way, shape or form. And then like the ultimate edition, it's pretty much comes with everything. And so it's just like, a book, a backpack, some plushies, some keychains, as much stuff as you could possibly think of to sort of get the full experience of everything. And so I try to give people as much variety in the like immersive storytelling experience as possible, mainly because the way I describe the work is there's multiple access points to engage in the story, whether you want to use the book or you want to use, you know, the backpack or the plushies or whatever, but they all feed off of each other. And so as an immersive storytelling experience, what does it look like to tell a story beyond a page and how the things that go beyond the page inform the storytelling experience, right? And so it's mm-hmm. So you're pretty much going into a whole world that you could literally place yourself into. And the reason why I wanted to do that, especially with this project, is because I want to create something that is culturally relevant. And so, you know, whether it's the animation, the characters, or, you know, just the fact that they're cooties and people feel some type of way about cooties, you know, being able to have all these things serve as a story, and that story is supposed to teach you about your skincare. You know, at the end of the day, regardless of how you engage in the story, I give you a lot of avenues too, but it's all a health education project at the end of the day. And so if you're like, oh man, I remember this on page one and page three or page four or page 60, each one of those elements you remember, you know, that's a step in the right direction for like what the end goal is. And so for me, you know, just having the opportunity to create something that allows people to really explore and invest their time in and explore it their own way and giving them avenues to do that. I mean, like, I never thought that would be possible once I got into animation and like storytelling in general. But the fact that I could just sort of create my own adventures or have these whole create your own adventure things that go beyond just a book. Oh, man, I freaking love it. And so. So I think the Kickstarter finishes up, I want to say, on September 10th. And the goal is to raise like $3,000 to get the project launched. And then from there, it'll allow me to go through get the book printed and get everything sort of out to the backers and hopefully start to do like a convention run when I get through this next sort of like semester of medical school, and I'll have time to like do some like convention stuff. And then, you know, you'll be able to see Cootie Catchers in the wild.
All right, there you go. So folks, you know, September 10th is a long way away, so you don't have any excuses for not yes. checking out the project. I'm going to throw it out there that you can't say, oh, well, it's only got a few days left. No. That's a long time away, and help Steven out. Check it out. I want to ask about a couple of other projects, because I saw that Cootie Catchers is part of a bigger universe, for lack of a better term, the Island Fever. So what is Island Fever all about?
Yeah, so Island Fever is essentially like the main storyline that like Cootie Catchers is sort of like a spinoff from. And so the main character in Cootie Catchers is the stuffed animal of the main character for Island Fever. And so at the beginning of Cootie Catchers, Roscoe, the main character of Island Fever, he goes off and he goes missing. And so then it's up to a stuffed animal to kind of like figure out where he's at and save him, essentially. And so the main story of Island Fever is the first project that I started to create in like the augmented reality sort of world that I have. And it started off as just a webcomic. But as I started to get deeper into medicine, I wanted to explore this like nuanced concept of like essentially like the immune system and like how society is sort of has its ills. And I place it within this fictional island of Illtopia. And so Island Fever, it's really pretty much in the name, right? Like the island has a fever, and it's up to the main characters to figure out, you know, what's the cause of the fever and ultimately like cure the island. And so it's just something that that has allowed me to tell stories with the characters and develop a rapport with the characters, and then also like subtly introduce sort of like health concepts into it from like a society perspective. And so it's crazy because I pretty much came up with it, I want to say like 5 or 6 years prior to like me like getting into medical school. And so as I've like gone through like my medical education journey, a lot of the stuff that I was sort of playing around with these concepts, now I, you know, being in medicine, like I know the like basis of like what, you know, the foundations of like how the mechanism of all those things work now. And so a lot of it now is me sort of like taking what I know in medicine and really trying to like make it like a very stylized and hyper, you know, hyper stylized and like fictional version of these things that within like the context of like a society. And so it's a, you know, if it isn't anything, it's definitely innovative because like, you know, like if there's an explosion on the page, you get to see that explosion pop out, you know, pop out from the book and stuff. And so it's been a really good point of exploration for like, what the technology is capable of doing within sort of comic books, but then also seeing what impact the marrying of the two has for people to have, you know, a book experience that like they enjoy looking at. Right. And so like my recent book, the most recent book for in the Island Fever series, it's a fully immersive book from like cover to cover. It's like 3 hours. And when I've shown it off, the interesting thing about it is that people were so immersed in like enamored and immersed in like the fact that it comes to life that they forget that like you could actually open up the book and like explore every page of it. Mm-hmm. So people look at like the cover of the book or the first couple of pages for like 5-6 minutes. I'd be like, man, there's like 100 pages in this book. Like, you know, and so just to be able to like create a series that like people thoroughly enjoy just like engaging with, you couldn't have told me, you know, all you got to do is just bring it to life and people will go crazy. If you would have told me that when I first got started, I would be a lot further along than I was before. But yeah. So, you know, just Island Fever is just everything for me is just about how do you like make health education culturally relevant to people. And to do that, you know, it's all about storytelling and making something cool that people enjoy.
And of course, Cootie Catchers and Island Fever, all part of Illtopia Studios, where all your projects live, including you have quite a few podcasts as well over there, as well as a vlog and whatnot. So where can folks check out Illtopia Studios?
Yeah, so they can find it on Instagram at Illtopia, or, you know, find all the merch at shop.illtopia.com, all the above.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Steven for just one moment to talk to you about Courtney 614 Online Sales, the newest sponsor of the PVD cast. If you need health and beauty products or women's fashions and you don't want to break the bank, stop by and see what they have at Courtney 614. Courtney 614 is available through all of those major reselling apps like Mercari, Poshmark, whatnot, etc., etc. Just go to the search bar. Put in there Courtney 614, that's Courtney 614, or Courtney, same spelling, underscore 614, and you'll find all of the great deals that they're offering at Courtney 614 Online Sales.
Well, let's talk about a couple of more, I guess you could say, personal things here real quick, because you had the opportunity to play football play football at a pretty big school, the University of Hawaii.
Yes. Yep.
How does that work? Because I've always been curious. Of course, I'm here in Columbus, home of The Ohio State University, where all of the buildings and places that those football players have to go is a 10-minute walk. That's not the case in Hawaii. So what was like a typical week if you had an away game? Like, how did that week unfold?
I mean, it was just a lot of time and energy dedicated to really just football. Like, if I were to say, like, it was a full-time job, I would say, for the most part.
Okay.
Like, it was a full-time job. So, like, the majority of my, like, college career, or just my time in college, I was, you know, I played football, I went to class, I had some side projects going, you know, going along, but it was essentially from, like, 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. every single day was dedicated to, like, you know, practice, more practice, film study, and like classes sprinkled in between that. And so a lot of it was just like everything was regimented. That's mm-hmm. just like the thing that I like always remembered. You know, having being able to take a break or being able to sleep in, like that was a luxury. Even to this day, like I can't sleep past like 6 a.m. or like 6 or 7 a.m. And mainly because, you know, I'm in medicine now, but like a lot of the stuff, you know, we had like 6 a.m. practices. And mm-hmm. so like, you know, there was a lot of sacrifices that had to be made within to compete at the highest level. And when I got injured, I then had to like invest a lot more time into like my body and my craft, to the point where the things that I did had to be a lot more efficient. Like I had to be really good at what I did, even if like my body was kind of falling apart. And so that meant that like I needed to know everybody's assignment on the field. I needed to know what the scouting reports were doing. I needed to know all these different things just to be able to play, or at least like, you know, like get my job done on the field. And then I also had to like get good grades and like, you know, do all that stuff. And so I think once, you know, it's something that like I really, really appreciate now, despite all the injuries and all that stuff. And I was playing when like we weren't getting paid and stuff like that. Yeah. Right. So like it really forced me to be really diligent to a schedule, but then also like, it forced me to like really understand the concept of sacrifice towards like an end goal that you're not going to see until later on. Right. And so like the way that I describe it now is like, you know, for me, I have no problem like coming up with something or having a book and I start on page one. I know I'm going to finish 100 pages of it. To me, that's no different than, you know, starting in January of that year and saying, oh, we're going to try to get to a bowl game in December. And everything mm-hmm. that I do in the spring, in the summertime, in the fall is going to be servicing that. And if I fall short in those areas and we don't make it to that, I can look back and be like, huh, I cut some corners type of thing. Right. For me, it was a great experience. It allowed me to really, really like, I mean, I think it gave me an opportunity to like develop a lot of like skills and life lessons, you know, that mm-hmm. I like appreciate now. But the crazy part about it was that, like, you know, like when I got to Oregon or when I got to Hawaii, that was like after the June Jones run. And so like, I got to sort of like, you know, play with some of the guys that like sort of were a part of that experience. And then when I got to Oregon State, we ended up being ranked like 9th in the country. And so it was wild to just be like, oh yeah, we're playing on ESPN every single week. And like, we're in those conversations, right? If like my worst fear was like giving up a touchdown or missing a tackle on national television. That was like my worst fear ever. And so like the things that I was worried about in college was like, how do I not make a fool of myself on national TV? And then I have like a final the next day or whatever. Like, I'm just like, how do I not let that happen? And so I had a blast. I loved it. And it allowed me to have a lot of great, you know, relationships and friends and people that I met. And, you know, I can't complain about that. Like I just wish that like my body didn't hurt now. It's just like, all the injuries that just like, now I'm in my 30s, all the injuries just sort of catch up to you very quickly and stuff. But you know, had a lot of great pictures and videos and experiences and moments in my life. And I had success, you know, was like a runner up for like academic All-American and, you know, got a whole bunch of awards and stuff. So like it really was a fun time.
Going back to the University of Hawaii for a moment, on top of all that stuff, I assume you had a pretty heavy travel schedule because you know, you're off on your own set of islands and all the other teams are over here on the continental US, right?
Yeah. 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 So there would always be a time where we would have like 2 away games. And so I remember that one of the things that we would always stay in Vegas for like 3 or 4 days during that time. Right. And it would always end up being during like midterms, which were like really sucked. And so I remember the last trip that I had at Hawaii where it was a two away games back to back. We played Army. And so we had to fly all the way to like from Hawaii to Philadelphia. And then from Philadelphia, I think we drove up. It was either Philadelphia or like New Jersey, and then we played in Army, and I think we flew across the country on like a Monday or Tuesday, so we could get acclimated to like the weather and everything. And then after that game, because I think it was like a Saturday game, so after that game, we flew over to Vegas and we stayed in Vegas because we were going to be playing Colorado. that next, that following week. So we essentially flew to Vegas on Sunday, and that was a Saturday game as well. So we pretty much stayed in Vegas at like a casino for like six or seven, like for like 5 or 6 days. Then we flew up to Colorado. We got there, I think, like the day before, like 2 days before, played them in Colorado. And I remember people were still cramping and stuff like midway through like the game, because we're used to like sea level. And so then after we finished that game, then we flew back from Colorado to Hawaii, I think that Sunday. So like Monday of the follow of the previous week to, yeah, so it would typically be like a 13-day trip and stuff. So yeah.
Okay, because I, being a dummy, I always thought it was you flew over, played the game, flew back, flew over, flew back. Like you were constantly doing that. That makes so much sense, though, that if you schedule things that have back-to-backs, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, and part of it is the reason is because we have to get used to like the time difference, because every away game is a time difference. And so every away game was a time difference in Hawaii. And then also like Hawaii is at sea level. And so any time we were playing a place like Nevada, or when we were playing Colorado or whatever, where they're like 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 feet above sea level, we're not used to that. So like, it just like, because we're not used to that, like if we get there the day before, get there a couple of days before, our bodies are still getting used to it. And so, you know, it just kind of puts us at a disadvantage naturally. And so there's things that like we would normally do during the week when we're not away to sort of help with that, which wouldn't be fun either. We would have like long sleeves and like, you know, we'll be wearing like long sleeves and like plastic bags under our uniforms and stuff to get used to like the environment. For the most part, like you never really know until you're like there. And then like, and you just got to give yourself enough time to just like get used to it. So it's, you know, football when you're playing, you know, on the Division I level it's a whole another beast. Like it's a lot of stuff that goes into it that people don't really think about. I mean, I played it for 6 years. So like, you know, I'm just like, dang, I know exactly what to expect, you know, but for people that have never gone through it, it's crazy. It's really crazy. You know, the worst thing would be like at Hawaii, the worst thing is that like I would have classes on Monday and Wednesday. And like, so I'm taking organic chemistry, I'm taking these like science classes. And so like, they don't care about sports. And so like, you know, if I don't get a tutor for that class and I don't do that early on, I may not pass the class because I'm just not going to be there. And it's not my fault. And so, but you're still held to that same, expectation of everybody that is there. And this is before like Zoom classes and stuff. So I couldn't just log on and just like watch it off of a plane or whatever. And so those two week trips would really suck. It would be great. Like during it, you'd be like, oh yeah, I'm chilling. You know, like, I get to like enjoy myself or whatever. But then you come back, you'd be like, oh, I got all this work I do. And midterms are next week. And I had been in class in two weeks. Like it's like the student athlete part. That was the thing that a lot of guys struggle with. Like it's just tough. It's just tough to navigate sometimes.
All right, let's talk one more final question here, and then we'll plug social media, website, and everything. Obviously, you have to be a fan of comics, you know, with your skills in animation and illustration and that. So who are some of your favorite like superheroes or characters in the world of comics?
So I was never I was always a big fan of like storyline and actual creators. And so anything that like my favorite creators made, that's the stuff that I enjoyed. Right. And part of it is because because like, you know, you get used to sort of like a run of like Spider-Man or Superman or whatever, and you love that storyline and it's done by a particular writer or team. And then like another version of it would come out and you'd be like, this isn't what I signed up for. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I started getting into like growing up, I was a big fan of like the Boondocks comic strip. So I like mm-hmm. had all the comic strips of stuff. And then I started when I was in like a sophomore in high school, one of my English teachers, because I really hated like doing book reports and like reading. Like I just wasn't a big reader. And so he introduced me to graphic novels. And Selva, and so the he was like, oh yeah, we have like a class assignment every month. You need to read a new book and write like a report on it. And so he got me into graphic novels. And so like my first graphic novel was actually the Inhumans, and it was like the graphic novel Inhumans. And so I got into that. And then after that, Civil War came out. And so like the Civil War, like comic event, came out like around that time. And so it was just like, I got used to the Inhumans as like a graphic novel, standalone graphic novel. And then I got introduced to like the Marvel or like the summer comic events, where like every series, like every main series that was like running was like, all had at least a couple of issues that summer for like that one main storyline. And so I really got into just like reading a whole bunch of stuff for the storylines and all these different characters. And then as I got older, I started to see like, okay, this is like a thing that like is constantly recurring, and it would always be helmed by like one particular art, like one main team that would like write the whole story, and then they would have side issues for it. And so like Matt Fraction, Brian Michael Bendis, David Walker, and were like my main writers that I always followed. And then like one of my favorite artists, and like a lot of my style now is sort of reminiscent of it, is Scotty Young. Like my favorite artist hands down is Scotty Young, right? So like his super deformed style and everything. So, you know, like, you know, Scotty Young does a cover, like Scotty Young does a cover for a comic, which he was doing all the baby covers. If he does a cover for it, I'm at least getting that issue and checking it out, right? And so, but like when I finished up playing football and everything, I started to get into like a Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, like Luke Cage, a little bit of whenever they would come out with like a new run for like Static Shock, I would get Static Shock. And then I Hate Fairyland. It was like some of like the Image stuff. And so so for me, like, because most of my introduction to comics was through like satirical comic strips, and then also like those big storylines for that, like Marvel and DC would do, I didn't really have like a character as much. It was just like, okay, what is happening and how, and like, who are the characters in it that I would sort of like resonate with? And so obviously, you know, like Spider-Man is always like a big one for me. I just finished up the Venom run. Like I got like one of the Venom omnibuses that introduces like the King in Black. And so just finished up that one. Reading Bitterroot right now. Which, like, ironically, so like fun fact, most of my favorite writers and like creators that like, I was like, oh man, I got all their stuff. So when I moved to Portland, I started to go to Portland State, and I was doing my like post-bac pre-med stuff so I could get into medical school. And I found out that they had a comic writing or like a comic studies program in there. It was like a post-bac master's program for comic studies. And so two of the adjunct professors were David Walker and Brian Michael Bendis. And so they taught the comic writing classes. And so through them, I ended up meeting like Kelly Sue DeConnick, Matt Fraction, Greg Grucka, and obviously, you know, meeting, learning from like my Brian Michael Bendis and David Walker. And so it felt to me, I was like, oh wow, like I get to learn from the best of the best, you know, creating all these things as I'm like trying to get into medical school. And so, you know, that was one of the sort of like the things that I felt fortunate about being in comics and getting into comics and making comics, is as I started to develop Island Fever, a lot of the inspiration that I drew from on a day to day just by going to class was coming from these like, you know, tried and true like vets in the industry and stuff. And so, you know, like Portland was a gym.
All right. Well, let's start recapping here real quick. The Kickstarter has got about another 50 days or so on it as of the recording that we are doing here tonight. So that is, just go over to Kickstarter and plug in Cootie Catchers with a Z, by the way. And that'll pop up all the information, correct, Stephen?
Yep. And so a cootie is technically spelled with a U. So it looks like cutie. So CUTIE, and then catchers with a Z. Yep.
Okay. And of course, Illtopia Studios, illtopiastudios.com, correct, for your website?
Yeah, so Illtopia Studios, and if you want to go like directly to the merch shop, it's a shop.illtopia.com.
All right, and I think you mentioned a few social media outlets, correct?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So so you can follow Illtopia at Illtopia, so at Illtopia. And then if you want to follow the Cootie Catchers project, it's pretty much Cootie Catchers or Cutie Catchers. So like CUTIECATCHERZ. So at Cutie Catchers is what that social media handle will be for Instagram. I think I only have Instagram for Cutie Catchers. And I think Illtopia is pretty much on all the social nets. So like TikTok and, you know, Instagram and X and Facebook and everything. You'll find Illtopia on all of those.
Okay. Steven, it's been fun to sit down and chat with you. And I appreciate you schooling me on how college football works, because again, I was very like, when I read that, I'm like, man, finally, I'm going to find out if it's true that, you know, the travel is horrendous. Yes. But anyways, thank you very much for taking some time out of your busy day today to sit down and chat with me. I appreciate it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me. And, you know, I appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit of my world.
You got it. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. All right, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Steven Christian talking about his new project, Cootie Catchers. And again, as we mentioned in our conversation, you know, the Kickstarter is going on until the beginning of September. So you have plenty of time to make up your mind if you want to help out or not. And if I may, I'll just say that you should help out because it's a great program. It's a great project. It's something that's going to help entertain as well as inform people. And I'm all about it. So I'd like to thank Steven for taking some time out of his very busy schedule to sit down and chat with me. All right, now it's time for me to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you have a question about this episode, or any episode for that matter. First of all, you can shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is the email address. You can also leave me a message over on the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads accounts. Just look for @PVDcast. And I'm still on Twitter as well, so you can find me over on my personal Twitter handle, which is @PVDMVP. Maybe you want to let some folks know about this great show. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that as well. First of all, you can get all of the new episodes every single Thursday over at pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting outlets. So all you got to do is go to your favorite outlet, open up the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And since we're talking about those major outlets, let me tell you what you need to do to help me out. And that is, of course, rate and review. Rating and reviewing pushes me up in the algorithm. And it's really important to independent podcasters like myself that we're getting the word out there, that people are following us and liking our content and whatnot. And so by rating and reviewing, and you don't have to do anything special, just give me as many stars as you think. And write me a nice review, you know, whether it was great show, loved it, whatever. You don't have to write a novel. But again, I greatly appreciate it if you would rate and review. And also, don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss out on an episode of the PVD Cast. And there's one final way that you can check out the week's episode, and that is on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I do a live broadcast of the week's episode. So there you go. Three ways to check out the PVD Cast: PVDcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet, or through the Facebook page, Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you very much for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. We'll be right back. following has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2025.